This is Autoline After Hours with John McElroy, episode 31 for Thursday, November 5th, 2009. My tank is full. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autolinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for Autoline After Hours at the iTunes store.
Welcome to Autoline After Hours. Here we are again live. And as I always start out the shows saying, joining me as always, Mr. Auto Extremist, Peter DeLorenzo.
John, my tank is full.
And I ram.
My tank is full. The new Chrysler Dodge Ram. Thanks, or I shouldn't say Dodge, should I?
No.
Not Dodge Ram. I should just call it the Ram.
Ram-a-lama-ding-dong.
Is Helen Reddy still alive?
Yeah.
Is she? Did she write the ad line?
Yeah, I am Ram Woman.
We're getting ahead of ourselves, but...
But we are. We're getting ahead of where we're going to go, that's for sure. And also here, David Welch from Business Week. As always, David, great having you back.
Great to be here, John.
And joining us this week, Paul Eisenstein from the Detroit Bureau and I know...
.com.
.com, you hit, your own website, and do a lot of freelancing in town.
Independent work, yes.
Independent work, yeah. Cool. Well, great having you on.
Thanks.
Because what a week. I mean, there's so much to talk about. There's the big Chrysler event that took place yesterday that everyone's
march.
Still talking the Bataan Death March,
yeah.
You know, where they beat information into us mercilessly.
I think the Sicilian Death March.
Right. Others, but we got to talk about Marchionne too. That guy is an interesting cat. The Ford Prophet that, you know, came out, October sales came out. Opel, you know, GM keeping that. Rumors of Fritz Henderson. We got to get into that as well. But
Toyota.
And Toyota in there too. I mean, there's
several different Toyota stories.
Yeah,
earnings.
No. Right. They made a profit, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Make it a two-hour show.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Toyota numbers were not surprising, but, you know, they're really putting the screws on internally.
Well, what kind of profit did they announce?
You know, I actually didn't see the whole numbers.
Dang.
I know.
I'd be curious because...
We do have a story on the Detroit Bureau.
And I know that's my bailiwick here on the show, but I'm literally closing the Bureau down.
As we speak.
And haven't seen too much in the way of information.
But the big thing is Chrysler. And Peter, can you believe, you know, I got there at 9:30 in the morning, and I did not drive off campus, as it were, until 7:30 at night.
Oh, you got out early. I finished writing, by the way, at 2:45. So
wow.
My bags are now trunks. You understand why.
Well, it's clear.
What's the deal? Why do you do such a long show like that?
Well, didn't Sergio admit that his silence cost them?
Yeah.
Yes. And by silence, what you mean is since they went into bankruptcy,
yeah,
there's like been no advertising,
yeah,
no marketing, very little PR.
One or two trial balloons.
Right.
But they shut down everything.
Right.
Even people who, for example, the Envy folks approached me about doing an interview. And I said yes, and that was the last I heard of them.
I mean, Sergio, like you said, he's an interesting cat. He is not what you would normally expect, to say the least. However, it's clear he has no use for any sort of PR advice of any kind or image advice.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about the way he dresses, but anyone would have said, you will have three meetings at least for that kind of information. You've got an analyst media show or just analyst show, whatever.
Right.
You've got a nuts and bolts, you know, we are the new Chrysler, we make cars. And we'll build quality and stuff. And then you have a marketing show. But you don't have a seven-hour death march. You know, it just...
Eight.
Eight, nine, 10, 12. It could have gone on, I'm sure. But, you know, it shouldn't have happened that way. But it did.
And well, he did say one thing, though, that made sense. He said, you know, look, we've been putting this big plan together over 5 months. And to put it out in dribs and drabs just... you know, wouldn't have made any sense. They wanted this big cohesive thing. I don't really agree with it, but I do see his point. Now, But if you're going to do that, there was a lot of stuff. I sat through every bit of it. And I will readily admit one thing. Yesterday, big day in the European Champions League, and I'm watching ESPN Gamecast during the Mopar presentation and some of the brand stuff because there just wasn't enough meat there to keep my attention. There was a lot of presentations in there that either could have been eliminated or condensed from the 30 or 40 minutes they were down to about 5 or 10.
Well, they should have been eliminated.
Why did we have the huge drag on Mopar, which I didn't feel there was very much information? At least half of those pieces could have been done almost as a tag team as opposed to a consecutive series. The alternative, and I don't know if this works or not, but I think all of us have been at least to one, if not two, of the old GM events. Certainly Chrysler wasn't going to take people to France or Italy or wherever to do that event. But to have done it over even a two-day event where you take some time, you get more time to sit down with the executives, you get a little bit more of a sense of who they are, meet with them, maybe smaller breakout groups and the like. We're probably getting a little inside baseball here for some of the folks who are watching. But
well, I don't think their executives have time for a two-day conference with the press. But it was just a very inefficient way of divulging information to, a wide body of people who need that kind of information. It was a very inefficient approach.
And I thought, from a marketing perspective, they were unprepared. And the stuff they did show was wince factor, off-the-meter, embarrassing stuff.
Which was the worst view of the Ram?
I don't know. The more I looked at the Jeep, the worse it got. And they were both bad.
What did you think of the Chrysler stuff, though? I thought the Chrysler creative was, I really liked it.
It wasn't really, but it was a tone piece.
I know, it's not what we're going to see. But
yeah, it's where they're going.
But you've got this suave Frenchman, who has been the marketing guy for Lancia, doing some very European kind of provocative, sexy stuff.
That's cool, how long has it taken Cadillac to get where they are?
Well, look.
10 years?
We're talking about, there are two different issues here. One is the direction for Chrysler, the creative they put out in the theme good? And I thought what they had was visually arresting. And frankly, since there was a lot of sex appeal in those ads, more aggressive than most auto advertising we see, which frankly is usually incredibly dull, very conservative stuff in the U.S. I thought they were stepping out a bit. Now, is the Chrysler brand, which sells dirt cheap PT Cruisers, Sebrings, and minivans, ready to put women with tattooed thighs on runways and match their cars up to it? That's the next snap of it. No.
Well, yeah, bingo. I mean, the net of yesterday is, do I want Chrysler to make it? Sergio says, we did it in Italy, and what's the big deal? We'll do it here. Well, it's a different company. Mm. It's a different country. He doesn't believe, I don't gather, in this image thing. Well, the Chrysler image thing is as bad as it gets. Right. GM's bad. Chrysler's below GM. That's a factor. And the net of yesterday I took away is they think this stuff is a finger snap.
The only thing that's going to help Chrysler right now with their quality issues is all the bad heaping stuff dumped on Toyota, because that's going to be all of a sudden the bad quality story, which is ironic. It's going to overwhelm even Consumer Reports. But they have
pride comes before the fall.
Yes, it does.
And that's, look, Toyota doesn't have the kind of quality problems that Detroit companies had in the 80s when things were truly awful. But in this kind of market where everybody except Volkswagen has quality, we've said this before in the show, but it dulls the real edge that Toyota has because they don't do design all that well still. This stuff's tasteful, but it's not. That's not why you buy Toyotas. And even when they try to do sporty Lexus cars,
they
have the horsepower, they handle nicely, but, does it
they
match up to a BMW?
They checked all the boxes, but there's no soul.
Does it match up to a BMW, an Audi or Mercedes, a Cadillac or an Infiniti?
Well, it's interesting that I've been to several events lately, including the launch of the LFA. They're $375,000 Lexus supercar, which is another discussion. But even there, their own people were laughing at putting down their new all-hybrid model, which is very, very interesting. So even there,
their own people were putting down the Lexus hybrid?
Yeah.
What, really?
250H?
Yeah.
In what way? How are they putting it down?
It's a garbage car.
Oh,
I mean, let's put it bluntly. I think it's one of the worst pieces of garbage on the road. Poorly designed, poorly engineered, interior design that's really ridiculous. I mean, I can go on and on. I really just, it's one of the worst cars I have been in years. It's nice to have something that I can truly trash because it's so hard to do that now.
Now, come on, be honest. Tell us what you really think about this thing.
I love it.
this sort of thing is what gives the domestics an opening to come back, though.
Well, it does. Now the thing, it's just fun because to be able to badmouth it so much because I've been at two events lately where Toyota and Lexus people have been, not on the record, but they've been saying as almost as harsh as I have. One of their senior guys who was involved trying to get the Japanese to change a few things was never says a bad word about the company, was telling me his frustrations. Huh? That car is like almost the opening of saying something's wrong. They're not getting it. They're not listening anymore. The real issue with Toyota is going to be their dealer. Can they handle at the dealer the problem? These guys don't handle it well when they had the rare one-off quality problem. I knew somebody out in California, very influential person in the movie industry, one of those people that would buy hybrids, Priuses, when she could have afforded something much, much more expensive, had a problem with the car, went to a major dealer, said, this isn't driving right. And they blew her off, didn't have any interest whatsoever in dealing with her. She finally went to another dealer. They brought her outside, put a tire gauge on, somehow things had gotten screwed up. The tires were doubly inflated. They were almost twice the normal inflation rate. No wonder they were driving bad. And they said, you need to go back to the first dealer. Tell them what happened. These tires might be defective. You've been driving them. Wouldn't do anything.
I'll tell you this.
Corporation wouldn't do anything. I finally had to intervene. And it was only after my third call to the right person that they finally went and dealt with her. They don't know how to deal with customers. And it's going to be a real test. The recall.
They've had some poor CSI scores for the Toyota brand. The Lexus dealers know how to do it.
Lexus does.
And, in fact, the Lexus dealers have written a book on it, which makes you scratch your head and wonder why they can't kick that over to the Toyota. The Toyota dealers have actually gotten better, and Toyota has launched some initiatives. Yeah. But, you know, their CSI scores have been a problem over the years that they've been frustrated with.
We're going to talk about dealers. We should talk about the Chrysler dealers who are looking at their watches wondering, what am I going to do for the next 18 to 20 months? You know, there were a lot of slides on there, like end of 2010. Then it jumped to end of 2011. And then it's just like you talk to these Chrysler dealers and they say, we don't have that kind of time.
Well, there's a lot more to talk about with Chrysler because that plan is just
brazen and
bodacious. I mean, you're talking, they want their total sales, U.S. and global, to go from 1.3 million this year to 2.8 million.
Yeah, come on.
They want to double sales in the U.S. from now to 2014.
Come on. I mean, I told John before the show, there are more holes in that plan than a cheese grater.
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You know, you look at the numbers and it's just like, you guys are dreaming here.
Let me ask you something. The weird part was when everybody was walking out, I had a chance to catch up with a variety of the analysts who were there. Joe Filippi, Stephanie Brindley, a few others, and one of the most critical people in the business, Mike Jackson.
And oh, yeah, Mike's like, he's signing up.
I'm really surprised by the fact that even the guys and women, analysts, who said, well, we have problems with this and that gap everybody has problems with. I was surprised how many people said he's going to make this work or we believe in him.
Okay, well,
Why is it?
I think people want him to succeed. I want them to succeed. I think the country needs them to succeed. But the level of success he's saying they're going to achieve, I'm not buying one bit of it.
See, I all they got to do is hang on for 2 years, and then they've got some what looks like filling in a lot of gaps in the current line.
Well, it's kind of 3 years.
Okay, but all they got to do is get through certainly 2010 and 2011. The market's coming back. They shouldn't be dropping off as much in the future just because the market's coming back. They have taken out an enormous amount of cost, just enormous.
They're running what, positive at an operating level right now?
They broke even in September. They say they'll break even on an operating basis next year, net break even 2011, $8 billion profit by 2014.
And $14 billion over.
Oh, $8 billion in EBITDA, $5 billion in operating profit.
Yeah.
EBITDA, I don't know why. Cerberus used to throw that out, too. It's earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization. As I wrote in the blog, your earnings before a whole bunch of shit that costs you a hell of a lot of money. why do they put this number? I mean, I know in analyst parlance. What it means, and
right.
I've talked to investment
right.
bankers about it, and it shows that your operations are doing the right thing, and it's
the du jour jargonese that financial types like.
Yeah,
to
but
use.
When you're talking about a company that's doesn't have a lot of cash, you've got to use the real net income and cash flow measurements. Now, look, I left impressed with one thing, and that was the CFO's performance or presentation at the end when he said that they'll break even in 2010, even if their sales are 20% below the 2011 right. projection, they'll still have $3 billion and enough to pay their bills. Basically, what they're saying is even if things are pretty bad and they're not looking for the big recovery in the next 2 years, the company will be in business.
Right.
The biggest
That's the
right.
thing that impressed me. Now, where right. it gets dubious is after 2011 when they're talking about this massive sales.
Then they better go get some marketing people because what they've got going on now is
well,
not
well, let's,
gonna,
we've got that, one of the Dodge ads. So let's get Ben to bring the Dodge ad up. And I'd love, real-time analysis, critique of this when it
While
goes.
While we're doing that real quickly, the thing that I thought was the most important point, you were touching on that, was the fact that virtually everything Marchionne was saying was based on numbers, projections in terms of market conditions below what the consensus numbers were.
Right. So, yeah, but their market share and sales
That's
projections are so high,
are
it sort of cancels that out.
Well,
but
you know,
hold on, let's get to this ad. Ben, can you bring that ad up? Because
my name
Peter, I'd especially like
is
to get
Ram,
your,
and my tank is full.
Take on this.
I am fueled by optimism, driven by passion, and stopped by nothing. I am a can-do spirit in a get-it-done body. All brawn, all brain. I am built not to last, but to outlast. Not to achieve, but to overachieve. I am built to reward the doers who climb behind my wheel every day by working even harder than they do. My tank is full. I carry a full payload, the loyalty of my owners, the accolades of my industry.
Haven't I seen all these shots before in Like a Rock?
Goods without fail.
Am I missing something? This is basically Like a Rock.
But I know my destination. I will not yield. I will not downshift. I will not coast to a stop. My name is Ram, and my tank is full.
I don't know. When I saw it, all I could think of was that Helen Reddy tune, and they lost me there from there on out, and it just. I don't understand the my tank is full part. I mean, it's optimism, I know, but it's one of these things where you got to kind of sit there and figure out what it is they're trying to say and translate it into a brand image. And at that point, the advertising.
Well, it didn't really help that Fred Diaz conducted his presentation like we were at a Dodge sales meeting.
Right.
That was totally inappropriate and cast a pall over everything he said.
Yeah.
I mean, and I was sitting next to Joe Filippi, and I just, Lena, you got to be shitting me here. Because I've been to plenty of dealer presentations at sales meetings in Las Vegas, the rah-rah. Yeah. What he did was perfect for that
right.
forum, but not for this, not for the media.
I've
I mean, it was like talking out loud in the wrong place.
Right.
It's like a silent gymnasium and there's some guys talking, my tank is full.
Yeah.
Well, and you know what?
Excuse me?
What it reminded me of, too, is when Joe Ajak used to get up and kind of do these very passionate presentations about Saturn and how much she loves the brand and what it means to her and all that sort of thing and how much trucks mean to Diaz because he's a Texan and this sort of thing. So what? I lived in
Well, like I said,
I drive a pickup truck.
Fine. Like I said, it was a sales meeting stuff.
Yeah.
I just can't project.
But the thing about
it was salesmanship.
I have
had an information debrief.
Two pairs of boots.
That was the thing. Another thing about the meeting, there was a lot of blurred things going on. It was a sales meeting. It was a rah-rah thing. It was like, here's our assembly people, and we love America. It was we're going to figure out quality in 10 minutes. We suck now, but believe me, by 2010, and I was just like, what? I mean, remember he said we missed it for about 74 days? Was there a quote in there where we
71 days. It took them 71 days whenever they found out there was a problem just to figure out, oh, yeah, we're supposed to actually look at this, aren't we?
Yeah, and I heard that and was just like, and that's all going to be fixed by 2010.
All right.
Damn,
guys
are good.
Can I stop for a second? I just want to turn this a little bit upside down because as I was going through with that, and I do have to say that there were some legitimate mea culpas and some real revelations there. I mean, some of them were a little bit hypey, like Ralph Gilles talking about some of the things, but there were some great lines about lost opportunities. And that raises the question. We had Daimler, and we had Cerberus, and we have this absolute mess. How did this company have what they are now come together or come untogether, if you will, over the last decade? How did this happen?
You know, that was the thing. And I mean, you know, halfway through that whole presentation, that whole, you know, Bataan death march yesterday, it hit me, Meg. You know, Bob Nardelli, Tom Lasorda,
right,
and Dieter Zetsche all got some splaining to do
because
that presentation unearthed a lot of crap that happened under their watch.
The quality issue. You guys have been around long enough, Dave. You're not quite old enough on the beat. There used to be...
Yes, young man.
Yeah.
Well, you sit back and let us old-timers tell us how it is.
Going back into the 80s, when Roger Smith and Bob O'Connell used to do their quarterly presentations where they told us each quarter how many billions they shaved off cost until they went nearly bankrupt in 92. And if you remember, Dieter was doing that towards the end of the Daimler reign, where they were constantly telling us how much they had improved quality and how much they had reduced the cost of warranty, how much they were fixing. Well, what happened to all that?
Well, if you remember when they first, Jürgen Schrimp, you know, the merger of equals and, you know, when they first got there, they were on point and they were focused and they were doing some really good things. There was a critical juncture there when the overlords in Germany started talking and said, we spent $36 billion for nothing, and we are now, I really believe there was a subtle, not so subtle shift in their thinking that we have to start cutting our losses here and figure out the end game.
When and why? What triggered that, and when was it?
You know, it was pretty much right around the Celine Dion thing. No, seriously.
That alone.
Yeah, right. Seriously, because there was a bunch of bad stuff going on, and that's when they realized that this whole thing is not working well, and there was a big board hand-wringing session, literally, not long after the Celine Dion. They pulled the plug on Celine Dion, but there was a lot of heavy financial things going on. The only reason I know is I was doing some consulting for them,
there's
a lot of closed doors and hushed tones.
But why did it get to that point? I mean,
there was
a while when things were working. Mercedes was a mess, and it appeared like Chrysler was almost starting to carry the load. I think it was probably overstated, but...
You had a few things going on. First, there was a large enough core of the German shareholders and their friends on the advisory board for Daimler who never liked the acquisition in the first place.
And Jürgen got out of favor.
Yeah, Jürgen got out of favor.
The whole Jürgen thing started to go away.
And when you started seeing signs, even though Chrysler was still making money, inventories piling up, and the company needed more investment in product, and the returns weren't quite, you know, what everybody wanted, and the enemies of the acquisition started really piping up, that's when things started to go sour. And Chrysler started to pull, or Daimler started to pull back investment money. And then for Americans I know who work in the company, morale started to sink because everything started to be done on the cheap. Good people started to leave. Mm. And you can get in a downward spiral in an organization like this when you start to really slash costs. And the people who want to do good work and want to make cool cars,
aren't being given the money or the liberty to do it. And they either go or, you know, you go into work every day and you're told no. And you, after a while, you just kind of say, if that's what they want, that's what I'll give them. And you go home at 5 o'clock.
Some of the mistakes are so severe. But it snowballs.
Then you know, the product isn't being renewed, so they start forcing the cars off on dealers. Dealer morale goes down. They need to shave pennies because they aren't getting pricing and they're paying more incentives. They start pounding on suppliers. Suppliers start giving them crap and quality goes down. I mean, you can get... I mean, when you got momentum like Ford does right now, you can put out cars that are... The product is good. I don't think it's terrific, but I think it's good. And it's like they can do no wrong right now. When you start doing things wrong in this business, everybody notices. Parts suppliers, consumers, dealers, employees, everybody starts to say, God, this is going to hell in a handcart, and you just...
Momentum, it's been said endlessly, matters in this business, perhaps more than anything.
And image matters.
But momentum becomes part image. It somehow infuses... In ways that just amaze me sometimes, but I still look at the Sebring. I look at so many of the things, the 71-day nonsense about literally waiting 2.5 months before you
address a serious quality problem.
You don't even, you just go la-la-la for 71 days. And for some reason, at 71 days, it's as if, look, you wake up. I don't get how, no matter how bad it got.
This is going to be an unpopular statement with some people, probably not most, though, but one of the big problems, I think, was putting Trevor Carey to top design and letting him stay that long because the designs...
No argument.
And there was no question. There was no check and balance. He likes very aggressive design. He went overboard. Their body engineering was done on the cheap. So you had garish-looking cars that had big gaps between panels, and it was overwrought cars that were poorly executed, and I think that was a big part.
They did everything on the cheap.
I'm having a problem. John.
Just amazing how they went from a great cross-functional platform organization that kicked ass and made a lot of money.
But all those guys were gone after
frittered that away through Daimler. Had it gutted by Cerberus, and now Marchionne stepping in and going, "Whoa, man! Look what they left me."
You make a good point about the cross-functional teams, but who are the guys who did that? You had Lutz, Castang, Stahlkamp. You had Holden on the sales and marketing side.
Gale. Let's not forget when Dieter and Wolfgang got there; those cars were locked in.
Right.
The LX.
Right.
So they, you know, initially they were gung-ho, and then there was a shift in Germany. And then, you know, I was one of the first ones to raise my hand and say, excuse me, Dieter, you're really screwing this up. And I took a lot of flack for that. But, you know, his track record ain't that great.
That's the point. But you know what's interesting? To your point about Trevor's designs, I'm sorry. Okay, the 300, I really still like the car. How many years? And it's still pleasant to look at, which is unusual in an aggressive design. But look at when did he become the box man? Okay, boxes are cool. You can do things like Kia with the soul and the like and make them real interesting. But virtually all the truck-based products and the minivans, it's just this, no tumble home. It's like they violate all the rules.
I don't think Chrysler design is that bad, really.
What in recent years, John, all the trucks have become these square boxes that have lost. The Jeep Grand Cherokee used to be the sport.
No, I totally agree. The Jeep Grand Cherokee, though, was stopped mid-project by Daimler and said, no, you will go back and you will put the headlights this way. And so if you look at it...
By the way, the Jeep presentation yesterday was terrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm sorry, but Mike Manley isn't the guy to be running Jeep. It just isn't.
Although he did
good international.
He was unusually honest. Not saying unusually honest for him, but for a marketing guy to get up there and talk about how they squandered the brand with underinvestment in marketing.
And then he turned around and said, well, we're going to investigate two-wheel drive Jeeps and other kinds of Jeeps and all this stuff. And, you know, once again, the Europeans didn't understand Jeep, and I don't think he understands Jeep. And that commercial is clear they don't understand Jeep.
Here we're running some footage of the new Grand Cherokee, and that thing looks good. I saw one driving in there to park yesterday morning, and that thing looks really good.
Interiors. That's where Chrysler could suddenly surprise people.
Well, they will.
Seen,
I mean,
you've seen the
Ram truck is a great example.
I've seen the 300 and the Grand Cherokee interiors,
they're
too.
They're really good. No, I mean.
Well, there's no excuse for it not to have
them. Right, but all I'm saying is, you know, I think what Zetcha and Wolfie ran into was the real impact of legacy costs. It really came home to roost under them. You know, retiree costs were skyrocketing like that. Healthcare costs, dump everybody in the jobs bank. And so you do everything on the cheap because how else are you going to take cost out?
Okay.
You can't cut the price anymore. you're already incentivizing everything.
Until the bankruptcies cleaned out a lot of those health care costs and all the debt these guys were carrying, which, you know, for GM, you're talking $3.5 billion in interest payments before bankruptcy.
Right.
And Chrysler had a big slug for its size as well. These companies had no margin for error. As soon as they had a downturn in sales, then, you know, the margins get thinner. And they're paying out so much in fixed costs. Remember, for them, labor is a fixed cost because you got the jobs bank. You pay these guys whether they build cars or not, so you may as well discount the cars, which just thins your margins even more. And it's just, you're on this steady glide path to ruin. They had no margin for error. And if there were errors or there was a slowdown in sales or the economy or they made mistakes with cars, you're done. And the Germans, I think, saw that and just said.
And, you know, that's another thing, getting back to the thing yesterday, is this plan absolutely hinges on the fact that there will be no missteps, no mistakes, no economic upheaval, no misses at all. And I'm sorry, I can't sign up for that scenario. It doesn't. This business doesn't work that way.
I'm not sure. I was actually impressed by the fact that their growth projections for the overall market were extremely conservative. Right. They're like a million units under everybody else. So there's a lot of upside there. And, you know, they made the point that they could hold on for
Well, I understand that, but their projections for what they were going to sell.
That's
no,
the question.
I agree. Their market share and this doubling of sales in that is going to be a stretch challenge, as they call it.
Well, Marchionne said something which will be interesting to see what happens, because he basically said this is going to cost them $23 billion to achieve. And if they're not making the money, they're not going to invest the money.
Mm-hmm. That was my question, by the way, in the Q&A. I mean, the whole thing has to feed off itself. The new models and the refreshed models, and I'm always dubious of mid-cycle enhancements, refreshenings, and stuff like that, because by and large, they don't really do the trick.
Well, when I'm looking at color shifts in caliber interiors or whatever they were showing, I was just like, come on, guys.
So they've got, you know, like the early models have to start boosting sales and generating cash, which they then plow in. Because remember, Daimler cut capital spending on new product, and then Cerberus cut it more to the point where they were under $3 billion a year. In fact, I think they were down to $2.3 billion a year.
Cerberus got out of the car business.
Yeah.
They just didn't tell anybody.
So they're going to go from, I think, $3 billion this year, and I think $2.3 billion last year, according to their government documents, I think that's what the number was, to upwards of $4.5 billion. And then I think in 2011, it's like $5.7 billion. So they're going to be spending a lot of money on product and doubling the per-vehicle spend on marketing, all of which they need to do. I think that's all great stuff because, remember, Carlos Ghosn's genius did turn around Nissan. I'm not taking anything away from the guy, but the thing that he really did bring to Nissan was $6 billion from Renault to plow into product. You don't see car companies turn around without serious investment coming in, and they're going to invest the money. Now, but the money doesn't come from, some big coffers in Torino. The money comes from selling Chryslers and plowing all that money back in, which is great, but they have to sell to get the new models to sell more and hit all these targets.
And that's why the dealers are worried.
And if they start falling short, then you're going to have some
problems. That's why the dealers are worried.
Yeah. I've got to ask you guys a question, okay? Something we didn't talk about as we were preparing today was the GAO report. They updated, they did a further study, and they said a couple days ago, GM, Chrysler, just not going to be able to pay back the government. Marchionne yesterday made a big point of saying we will. That's one of his top priorities.
There's two different tranches that you're talking about. Mm-hmm. He made it very clear that they're going to repay the TARP money, which was the second tranche of money that they got under the Obama administration. But remember, the Bush administration wrote two big checks to both Chrysler and GM, and everybody's pretty much kissing that money goodbye.
Yeah. I mean, when Steve Ratner, the former auto task force boss,
had the first press conference, I think, about, you know, they talked about the payback period. He pretty much, well, not pretty much, he said that since they didn't cut that check and allocate it, they sort of consider it somebody else's cash, and they don't expect these guys to pay back the initial money cut by the Bush administration because it was given to these companies without any real plan or requirements to come up with a plan that pays it back.
Public is not going to differentiate when they hold the Obama administration accountable for what they get or whoever might be in at that time.
Oh, look, that the Obama administration's explanation on that is something that flies in about half the population inside the Beltway. That's where that's going to fly. And elsewhere, nobody's going to care. But it's also one of these things, I think, that when GM puts out press releases saying we've paid back our debt to the government, you know, if they do it and Chrysler puts out that press release and then me and, you know, you and you know, other writers say, well, they did pay it back. And then in the third paragraph, but they didn't pay what the Bush administration allocated. And, you know, by then, you know, the readers are moving on to the sports page or the lifestyle page. And like, oh, well, they paid back most of it. And whatever. I mean, there will be outrage among the people who already hate government money helping the car companies. But I think that's something that's going to be short-lived, the outrage over it. I mean, they'll blame it on Bush because it's, you know, it's fanciful.
One of the things we got to get into, just keeping things going, is sales this month came in about 10.4 annualized rate, not a bad number, all things considered, I think. And Peter, one of the things that you sort of mined out of the numbers, too, that you had in one of your rants was smart sales going down the tubes fast.
Down 70.4%. You know, I think you and I, we agreed that when the smart thing was started, I said 12 months and you said 24 months tops. And that's coming to fruition. They're, what, 18 months in, 19 months in now? Mm-hmm. It's a short-term play, and, you know, Roger's a smart guy, but smart's dead in this country.
Can they do anything to bring it around?
Well, they've got an electric version.
I said, can they do anything to bring it around?
Yeah, actually, that wouldn't be a bad thing, you know, because the two big complaints I have with the smart is the transmission, which is abysmal. An electric car would get rid of that problem, I would think.
Yeah, the transmission is just junk.
The whole play is too smart by half. I mean, it's just small cars sell when fuel prices go up, but not that small. I mean, you can get a Focus or a Mini Cooper or whatever.
Cheaper.
Yeah, and the fuel economy isn't quite as good, but it's over 30, so it's good enough, and it's got a trunk.
Well, the mileage.
Yeah,
never,
but I tell you,
mileage was never that good.
No, I know for its size, it's not that good. But if that thing drove really well, if it was as fun to drive around as a Mini Cooper. No problem. Right. I think it would sell a whole lot better. We wouldn't see a 70% drop in sales in one month.
What about the store? What about the video that was on the web when the smart got smacked by a
double trucks sandwich? Do you mean?
Yeah,
there was a picture on the web that said it showed like two big dump trucks or cement. I can't remember, and it showed like the smudge.
Yeah.
And it said that's a smart. But a buddy of mine, engineer, pointed out that it was a five-lug wheel, and the Smart's only a four-lug wheel.
Oh.
That's what he told me. I mean, I'd have to check that out. But here we go. Oh, that's just barrier impact. I don't know if
I thought there was another real impact test. Not that. I thought there was another real impact
where
test.
It bounced.
Yeah.
It's actually a safe car,
it's,
I think. You know, that cage is...
Yeah, but Americans don't like... Some American buyers fear small cars because they think they are going to get creamed by somebody's SUV.
Right.
And, you know, the people who buy Minis and Ford Focuses and Honda Civics, it doesn't scare them because it's a big enough car. They've got good safety ratings. Smart's it's just because it's too smart by half. It's just too small for them.
Well, I don't want to get back to Chrysler too much right now, but if you look at the plan, there's a lot of B cars in there, the 500. And we're hearing it all over the place. So I remember in March watching CNN when Obama said, guys, your plans didn't fly. Chrysler, you're going to have to go to Fiat. And GM, you're going to have to work out something else. And you're going to have to go broke and what have you. And the smugger-than-thou commentators from headquarters and wherever else were saying, if they only built small cars and abandoned their trucks, this wouldn't happen. So there's this...
Well, there was so much bad stuff going on.
People who didn't know what you were talking about.
There's so many people that continue to say that the market will go to small cars. And we're seeing Chrysler at least trying to say that there's a big market for it. And studies say Gen X and Gen Y. Is that, do you guys believe it? Or
well, I mean, you know, there's still a great deal of people in this country who need trucks, used trucks. I remember they saying, well, we got to get rid of these big trucks. It's not going to happen. That's
right.
You know, that's why.
Here we go back here to the two trucks smashing the Smart together. But again, if you look, I believe it's a five lug wheel, and the Smart's only a four, is what somebody pointed out to me. So I think that's another Photoshop urban legend.
There was a test done with a Smart. It actually rates pretty well, but the video was
the Smart does very well. It's got a safety cage and. But that's not it. I mean,
it's interesting. Do people think it's safe?
Yeah, we're become such a nanosecond attention span society that.
Was he talking about something?
Yeah, I forgot. But I mean, you know, people, you know, we talk about a car 18 months before it comes out in this business. It comes out.
It's already old.
A few months later, yeah, and I worked on ad campaigns, and that was a tremendous, you know, troublesome thing in the ad business, because you'd spend 12 months with a client on a campaign and, you know, work day and night, and would come out and, you know, 2 months later they'd be looking at their watches saying, well, what are we going to do now? It's just like, you have to stay with this. You can't just walk away. Well, what has come happening in the car business is you have a launch, you've got 12 months. You've got 12 months to make an impression enough with the American consumer public to sustain it after those 12 months.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's interesting, is a lot of makers right now don't have the resources to support.
Yeah.
How many cars have you seen where makers would support them? Mazda was a classic one 20 years ago. When they brought out so many cars, they could support three, and they kept falling off.
And GM's finally realizing, you know, they can't. Yeah.
Can't do it all.
Well,
speaking
yeah.
of GM, they had a sales gain. And a market share gain. They also had 4,100 in incentives per vehicle. That's what Edmunds had.
Yeah.
Quite a bit more than everybody, I think, but Chrysler.
Hmm.
No, they admit that they are the big spender right now. Doherty last week said, we're way up there, and we're not going to come down a lot. I mean, I was,
well,
at least she was honest.
It's a little problematic because Ed Whitaker has said he wants market share gains. And he wants it done profitably, and he doesn't want a ton of incentives. And this is where we get to, you know, the pressure on Fritz. I mean, you know, the board reversed the Opel decision this week, and it's a deal that Fritz initially recommended that they sell Opel to Magna and OEO Sberbank. You know, now things are a bit different than when Fritz recommended that deal. You know, at the time, the Germans were not going to finance a GM-led restructuring. And they weren't going to finance a bid from anybody else but Magna.
Mm-hmm.
Then the European Commission steps in and says, wait a minute, to the German government, was this really a competitive bidding process? You wouldn't finance anybody else. And the Germans said, oh, no, that's not true. We would have financed somebody else. And then GM sort of says, well, you would you? How about us? And that did give them an opening to do this. Also, there were a bunch of people on GM's board, a handful of people on GM's board who are sort of basically private equity guys. And Gursky now one of those, and David Bonderman is another. And they were basically saying, look, Magna's not putting much money into this thing. It's not a good deal.
No.
And we're giving up technology and all this volume and everything else.
There's nothing.
So they're
going to
try to do
it. That deal made no sense.
So let's get back to Big Ed. He said 90 days, right?
Mm-hmm. And they've got some market share gain, which is impressive because...
But is it
I mean, well, but think about this. Saab sales are falling off cliff. So is Hummer.
Pontiac.
So is Pontiac.
95% was the preliminary. I didn't look at the final number. Doherty was saying the other day, before the final number, that it would be 95% of their volume for October was the four core brands.
Yeah.
And that's up from, what, 80% only a couple
months
ago.
So they're posting a market share gain on, you know, with four brands essentially collapsing on them.
Right. Look, I think GM is on the right track here. You know, they have seen an uptick in brand consideration since the 60-day ads and everything.
They've got some great products.
They have great product. But
they still have mixed quality.
The question,
right.
To me, the question for the board
today
is, you know, does the board have patience with Henderson? Is, You know, are the profits and financial results going to be there? Are they too worried about paling in comparison to Ford? And I think, essentially, I think what may be in the mind of GM's board members is, can they successfully IPO this thing in summer of 2010 with Fritz Henderson and his crew as the management team? Can they sell that? Mm-hmm. I think that's what may be on their mind. And if they can find somebody who's really impressive that would be a better sell than Fritz, that may be, so it may not be, you know, deserve may not have anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. You know, Fritz may be, have this company on the right track. He might be doing the right things. But if the board either wants to see results faster or thinks that they need to show something, and just having somebody else with some impressive big, who that is, I have no idea.
Summer 2010.
And that's when they want to IPO this thing.
Are they going to hold to that? Because that's sort of like the argument about declaring the time you leave a war. Well, does it make sense? Is summer 2010 the right? And will they hold to it?
Depends on the financial results and what kind of multiple they can get when they sell that stock. Because mm-hmm. the government's not going to want to. The government wants out as soon as they can, but they can't eat a big loss on this thing either.
Right. Well, hey, let's get to see and hear what the viewers have got to say and hear. So, Ben, let's bring up Rapid Fire. Okay, so this is Rapid Fire, where we're going to rip through these things as fast as we can. So Victor Castaneda Jr. says, do you think there will be a demand for decontented models like there were years ago?
Well, Porsche apparently thinks so, since they just announced the Boxster Spider for next spring, which has no air, no radio, gutted door panels, lightweight, a canvas fabric top, with, you know. So there's one manufacturer believes in it.
I
always think
Chrysler
there's...
How much
the
more
way.
Money do they charge you to it's, take all that out?
It's 61 grand.
Well, it's interesting. Chrysler yesterday said that we're not going to go to the traditional base.
That was Ralph Gilles.
Yeah, Gilles.
People aren't going to buy them, no. I mean, the trend we've seen over the past decade is, you know, even in compact cars, leather seats, you know, connectivity.
Well, the base stuff... The people who are buying the base stuff are often going for the certified pre-owned, or the people who go in the base.
And those cars have
content. Are fleets that the manufacturers don't
okay.
necessarily want.
Salvador G says, has anyone ever had the experience with floor mats causing or almost causing an accident? I have, but it was years ago. It was years ago. And all I did was push on the brakes and drag the thing out from under and keep going.
I had it a year or so ago. And it was not a Toyota product.
Yeah, I can't remember what mine was on. It was so long ago that it happened. It's only happened to me once ever.
And by the way, the reason I had that was that I did just toss the mat in without tying it down.
Okay, Bad Nickel on Twitter asks, I heard Ford will use the fact that they did not take government money in 2010 commercials. Good idea or bad?
No, they're not going to do that. And it's a bad idea if they did, but they're not going to do that.
From a PR standpoint, they've been riding that horse long enough. It's mm-hmm. time, you know.
Yeah.
It's time to say what they're about, not what they're not about.
Yeah.
And they've got good stories to tell.
It's worked for them, and it's there. People know it. Move on.
Okay, Pedro Fernandez wants to know, do you like Ford's new 10-second spots on TV where they have a young person point out some feature on a new Ford? Or do you prefer Howie Long's Chevy spots where they compare Chevy with Honda?
Well, they're 15s, first of all, and yeah, I think they're light years better than the Howie Long stuff.
I like the Howie Long spots.
Howie Long's fine, but I think the...
You know, but they say about those ads.
No, what do they say about those ads?
They say they're terrible. Or they say they're good.
Howie's
I don't
fine.
Know.
Howie's fine. I think the Ford 15s are very
better,
effective.
Though, right? Yeah. And I would just say, you know, Art Spinella, who we had on the show, pointed out some months ago that the Howie Long ads that they ran earlier in the year were very effective for Chevrolet. He was surprised they had gotten rid of him. Ron Paris asks, what the hell is going on with this Toyota? Actually, he says, what the heck?
Yeah.
Don't want to misquote Ron Paris here. What in the heck is going on with this Toyota recall situation? There's so much conflicting info floating around. defective floor mat design, defective accelerator, defective ECU. No one seems to have a clue as to what the real problem is or what they're not
saying. Well, the hysteria is starting to build in Washington, and the bonfires are growing, and the safety extremists are going to come out, and they're looking for a witch somewhere.
Has Toyota put out a new format, a new solution for this yet? If they did, I've missed
no.
it. They said that they were going to.
We're going to.
See, this is where they're blowing it, is that they've got to have a solution. I mean, as dumb as it is, I mean, you know, formats corrupt. They got to.
Well, the solution's easy. Take the floor mat out.
Yeah. One of the real.
If you worry about it, would I worry whatsoever if I had a Toyota with a floor mat? I would not worry in the least. I think this is a total nonsense.
It is, but they got to put
out the
fire.
It's like Audi unintended acceleration.
Exactly.
It's like the Pinto, you know, with the rear end collision.
John,
it's nonsense.
PR and marketing,
it happens to every brand.
Your job is to deal with problems both real and imagined.
Right. Well, your point, John,
danger
is
point.
This is going to become for Toyota.
I get emails on
Audi 5000.
Yeah, no, you're right.
Again.
You're right. Yeah. Okay. Jay Cujo says, have any of you heard of self-healing paint or seen it in action?
Yeah. Nissan. Was it Nissan or Infiniti?
Infiniti, I believe.
It? And I think somebody else just brought it up, but I don't remember.
Have I seen it in action? Nope.
They did a demonstration.
Did DuPont develop that?
Yeah.
Somebody did
Isn't
that.
There
I don't know.
Scientology about that?
Okay.
You can
and
use drugs to make it
self-healing.
For Peter, if you were in charge of Dodge, what would your lineup be?
That's a long question. I will have to write a thesis on it and get back to you. Short term, I don't know.
Okay, drop that. What did you think of what they said of Viper, dropping Viper and maybe bringing it back later?
Bringing a Fiat
Well,
product.
What I think they're going to bring back is a version of the Maserati coupe, decontented a little less costly.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay, Volt230 wants to know, are all of you now enchanted by Sergio?
I was impressed.
You know, I think I'd like to drink a bottle of Gaia with him, and I'd like to hang with him, but I still think that he's still signaling to me that it's a finger snap. This is no problem. We did it in Europe. We can do it here, and it's not that simple.
I don't fully think. I think he's trying to get that across, but I also think he's signaling, if you look back at what was said, that there's a mess over there they're going to fix. He needs to try to put on this. We can make it look work image, but I think that yesterday it came across they've got a disaster on the hand.
But they do, and it's not going to be a finger snap. I think it is going to be harder than he went on yesterday. Absolutely, the guy does have credibility though. He did. Fiat was left for dead when he took over. Number one, and he did turn it around. Two. This guy is not about BS. This is a guy who fires executives in meetings with other executives there if they are about BS. At the moment, the guy's got credibility. I don't think he's going to double sales for the company, but the guy's got credibility in the financial stuff.
So I wish him the best. I wish Chrysler the best.
Interesting guy is what I'll add to keep the conversation moving. Porsche Girl wants to know, if you had to buy a Chrysler product, what would you buy?
300C. I'd
wait for the next 300C because to me, that may be one of the best domestic products ever built, if it looks as good as what we've seen already.
I'd also buy a Fiat 500.
I'd get a Viper Wrangler four-door.
I'd get a Wrangler.
Actually, a Fiat 500 Abarth. That's the car
I would The Abarth could be a real cool car.
At Paris Auto Show, they had the hottest girls next to the...
They had a 500 sitting outside the event, and I sat in the thing. Right. The interior is very cool.
No, it's an awesome car.
Very cool car.
They have a Cabrio coming, as we learned, and they've got a Turbo coming, which I got to believe is the Abarth.
It's not going to make them money.
By the way,
back to Smart, which we discussed earlier. Mm-hmm. If Smart had been able to figure out how to do a 500-like car, that brand would be... just golden.
Okay, Unsprung asks, does anyone think the unibody Dakota will be a hit? Because they talked about doing that, a unibody pickup.
No, that they should deep six that idea.
No, I'm not totally convinced of that. I think that Honda, excuse this gurgling stomach, I'm hungry. I think Honda blew it just with the design, but I think the potential is there. It's going to be very interesting to see if they can...
Yeah, but they got so many fish to fry. I think that's got to be low on their priority list.
But it clearly is, or it would have been approved. I think that looking forward, there may be a real market, especially if they can deliver some serious mileage without too much sacrifice of functionality. Mm. That's the question. What can they deliver? Just because it's unibody isn't going to work, it's going to have to really, really be a breakthrough product.
There's a market for it in Thailand.
Export, baby, export. Okay, Rumble Strip, this is more a comment. He says, best news to come out of the Chrysler thing yesterday was that Fiat will be pushing clean diesels in the U.S.
Yes.
And there's no question. They had diesels, you know, filling a bunch of boxes there. Okay, Mud Monster 37 asks, with the Cruze having four-cylinder turbo, will other GM cars have turbos coming in the future?
No question.
No, I think they have to. I think, yeah. And I think Ford.
They got them in the works.
I think Ford's way ahead of the curve on this.
Well, you know, it's three technologies: direct injection,
right.
Turbocharging, dual clutch transmission, and then the massage of all that together. And we're going to see everyone do that.
Nice to see. Very low comment on that, but the fact that Fiat's going to be pushing their dual clutch into Chrysler is great.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of that technology.
Yeah, no, it's a good technology. So here's a second part of Mud Monster's question. Will Chevrolet and Buick ever get a rear-wheel drive car?
Yeah, Chevy's going to get the Caprice.
The cop car, for sure.
There's going to be a passenger, yeah, a retail right. version of it.
Yeah,
I mean, we had Mark Royce here. And
he wouldn't say.
he wouldn't say,
but show,
he sure didn't deny it.
I've heard they're going to show the consumer version of it at the Detroit Auto Show in January.
Uh-huh.
But before, I was told they need a little time to cleanse the palate between the G8 and the Caprice coming to market.
Uh-huh.
You know, production times.
Yeah.
Because they don't want it to appear to be rebadging. And there's going to be some real re-engineering with it, too.
I loved what Mark Royce talked about, too, of a wagon. But the kind of wagon that he would do. I thought that was very interesting.
Mm-hmm. Is it like a shaggin' wagon, you know, with the dog? The big dog wagon, like in Dumb and
Dumber? You know what, I've got the Cadillac wagon, the CTS outside.
Mm-hmm.
And it's fun. I miss wagons.
Huh.
I may be the only one in America, but I miss wagons.
Okay, a comment from Chevy Rules. Will the engineering work that made the Equinox achieve outstanding fuel economy go into the Malibu to make it a class leader in its segment? I don't know. What special from a fuel economy standpoint went into the Equinox?
Well, Equinox got, you know, they're pushing the 30-mile gallon.
It delivers a high number.
Yeah. Direct injection?
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be part of it. Yeah.
I would assume GM is going to, they have to spread all that technology. They have no choice.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, David Logan writes in, and he's been hammering this point, I know, for us. Why does everyone think the 2010 CTS Sport Wagon is a new vehicle? I think it's just a new version of the 08 SRX.
No, it's not.
No, I don't think so.
It's
funny,
CTS. But it's not.
No, the SRX, no, the SRX is a totally...
Yeah. And it is fun. I mean, it's... Though, by the way, I needed to do some work, so I sat in the back seat with the seats pulled forward. I was really disappointed with just how low the headroom is in the back seat. I'm 6'2", but I was...
Well, if you want headroom, you got to get one of them Panameras.
What they need to do with the CTS wagon is put one of those rear-facing seats in the way back, yeah. The head back in the 70s and 80s.
Okay, Phil Hopewell wants to know...
Out with one of those again, isn't it? Wasn't somebody coming out with a rear-facing seat?
Right. Yeah. Phil Hopewell wants to know, what do you think of the sneak peek of the new 2011 Dodge Charger shown at the Fiat Chrysler press conference yesterday? I sat there all 8 hours or 9 hours or whatever it is. I never saw it.
I saw it.
Kolapnik, I know, had it today or a picture of it.
Yeah, I saw it. I mean, it's one shot was down the
right,
left
right.
side of it.
Exactly right.
It's gonna look good. The new Charger's going to look really good.
That was it looked like a Charger.
Yeah.
It's got those haunches.
That's what everyone, I mean, that's the first thing you say. Oh, well, that looks like a Charger as
is
opposed to.
Is there a market for Charger anymore?
They better hope there is.
Do you think so?
You know, there will always be people out there looking for rear-wheel drive performance. There
right.
just will
There's
be.
A niche for it. But,
enough to
they got to come up with a better design. The current car is horrible.
Well, the new Charger is going to be good.
Okay, and what about the new 300? Do you think that will be a hit?
gorgeous. Absolutely.
Looks great.
I think it's a commendable refresh.
Yeah.
Commendable refresh.
The key to that will be the interior because that could make it a real luxury car.
Yeah, the interior has to be a Grand Slam home run.
It's sad because they've known for years that they were really losing a lot on the interiors. I remember Sidlick was on a show that I did with you some years ago. Uh-huh. So we left, we talked about it. Uh-huh. And he was saying, you know, what if we took the money that we charge for a 300C and we offer a less powerful version and take the same money and upgrade the interior? Would that sell? Well, we'll find out.
Okay, a comment from Dirk. Did any journalists at the Chrysler briefing ask exactly how Marchionne was able to increase the company's cash position by $1.7 billion in 3 months while sales tumbled? Did Chrysler stop paying its bills, or did Marchionne just move some of that $2 billion from GM that made him look like a savior at Fiat?
Well, they did. I believe they got some cash. They got cash during the bankruptcy and I think coming out of it as well. They cut costs a lot and they cut a lot of debt. That's what it's got to be because they weren't generating positive cash flow. So they may have had some dip financing coming out as well. I know GM did. So
another key thing, too, I'm sure you picked up on, was how they're applying for $1 billion in DOE grants.
Yeah, but they haven't got
for the next
yet,
3 years. Yeah, right. Yeah. But that was in their cash flow assumptions.
And they've got a line of credit for $2.3 billion that they haven't tapped yet.
Mm-hmm. So, I think we're just...
By the way, Toyota made $242 million in the quarter.
How much?
$242 million.
That's not a bad number.
Not bad.
For a company that was supposed to lose, what was it, $6 billion in the current fiscal year?
Six or seven.
That's not bad.
Yeah.
That's not bad at all.
Just being in the black in this market, they've cut some capacity...
Off-the-wall question about that. Was any of that generated through the Clunkers deal? Is it? They certainly benefited.
Well, look, some of Ford's pricing increases, they're telling me it's not, but it was. I mean, everybody was helped by Clunkers.
Toyota in particular.
It probably was.
Well, good thing for Ford is they're not spending as much as on incentives.
Right.
But that's really
that's huge.
Huge.
That's a huge
that's where
cash.
Net pricing.
Yes.
Help.
Right. Well, hey, we're at the top of the hour. We ought to wrap this podcast up. Want to thank everybody who's been here. Also, you ought to check out some of the instant impressions that we're doing of cars. They're very short videos. You can find them on John's Journal. We've got them on YouTube as well. And we've got some of my instant impressions of the Porsche Panamera there. Styling, driving, technology, that sort of stuff. Remember, you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/OutOfLineDetroit. You can follow us at Twitter, twitter.com/OutOfLine. Follow Peter at AutoExtremist.com. David at BusinessWeek.com. Just look for the Auto Beat blog.
Yep.
Right?
Or general stories.
And Paul at
TheDetroitBureau.com.
TheDetroitBureau.com. That's great. So... thank everybody who's been tuning in tonight. It's been good having you again.
Visit our website, outoflinedetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there and much more at AutolineDetroit.tv.
Orange, purple, silver, and blue. Change of frequency.